It's like I'm at the Batu Caves in Kuala Lumpur with monkeys climbing all over me.
Yes, and we are. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's.
Hello, everybody. Welcome.
Welcome.
Very special edition.
On the road, finally on the road. Stand by with JJ and Francisco. Yeah,
here we are. We've finally taken our little podcast about travel and the arts.
We're all vaccinated, by the way.
Somewhere.
There's also vaccinated a cat.
We happen to be at a destination, and the destination belongs to our guests.
Yes, because as a traveling podcast, we travel to the guests, because that's what we do, right? Plus, that's why this beautiful cat is here, one of the guests of the guests.
I mean, the cat belongs in this apartment as well, so right. We are the outsiders. So let's, why waste my shot.
This is a very LA cat. You know, it just wants a chat, the likes on Instagram.
Why should we waste any more time?
Let's do it.
Let's have our esteemed guest enter his own living room. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen. It's Tom Tran.
Tom Tran.
Here he is.
He just woke up from his nap. Sorry, we broke up. We broke up. Broke in into his apartment. Yeah, we broke in.
We've really excited Colby here,
she's definitely a attention whore.
How are you, man? How you doing?
Hey guys, what's up? Oh,
How's it going?
She likes you, Francisco.
All right.
We didn't list your credits because we were distracted by a cat climbing over us
like
a monkey. But of course, Tom Tran is part of the GI Comedy Tour.
I created the GIs of Comedy Tour.
Oh, created the GIs.
Creator of the GIs Comedy Tour.
There we go.
Colby.
Well traveled man, prestigious stand up comedian, radio host,
actor. Most recently seen on the. What's the CBS show? The
United States of Al?
The United States of Al.
Well, that's that.
Well, you're gonna be.
Out.
It's coming out. Yeah. Coming out. Well, he just shot it.
Yeah.
He's gonna be on it. Do you know when?
June 24th.
June 24th. Okay.
Excellent.
Great. So check it out on CBS.
There we have it. This is the gentleman that's joining us today. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks for coming over. Thanks for traveling all the way to North Hollywood.
What a journey.
We had to take our vaccine
Studio
passport.
City?
Yeah, pretty close. I went four stops on the subway.
Oh,
actually.
Okay.
So I did use the Los Angeles subway.
We have a subway?
Which is what most Los Angelenos say when I say that I use the subway.
We have one. Yeah, it's used by people like JJ, pretty much.
Just all right.
People that don't have cars and...
Stigma.
That like to... You know, because everybody in LA has cars, right?
Pretty much.
Thing,
so. Well, one of the first things I was told when I moved here was, if you want to have a career in this town, you have to have a car.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They told me change my name and get a car. So...
They said be white. Advice.
Yeah, I mean,
dye your hair.
Frank Rams. Frank Rams.
I can see them telling you that as well. Weirdly enough, the subway is very efficient in this town. But I took it once
to go to a Red Hot Chili Peppers concert. You know, it was fun because, you
dating
like,
yourself a little bit. But yeah, go ahead.
Because what?
Dating yourself a little bit.
That's true. No, but Red Hot, I mean, they're great. There's a great.
Yeah, but when was the last time they toured?
That was like 4 years ago. Was like the last concert. Yeah.
I'm also old. So
yeah.
If it wasn't Poison or Def Leppard, I don't.
Okay.
Oh, come on. You're not that old. Yeah, yeah. Come on.
The last concert I went to see was Journey and Def Leppard.
Yeah, but they're touring now, to be fair.
That's true.
Like you could say.
Yeah, you can't be like, when they start, like when they were just doing like.
Yeah.
All these bands are.
I was there before Steve Perry.
that's when we started to go. Okay, now we're dated.
but thanks for having us. I mean, as you know, but this is a traveling podcast because also we love me and JJ. We're both immigrants to this country, and you too, and this is what we're gonna talk
Don't
about.
Leave me out of it.
Yeah, no. Yeah. But the reason we started the podcast is because we're comics, we're both immigrants, and we're like, let's talk about traveling and being also from different cultures and love to talk about people that are comedies or musicians, or stuff like that, to learn about how do they deal with travel, what do they like about travel and all this stuff.
Yeah. Now, and a lot of our listeners at home and viewers at home, they know our background. So I'm from Canada originally, Venezuela. And I know that you were born in Vietnam.
I
don't know the story beyond that because obviously you're American.
Right.
Through and through. So, what was your journey coming to America?
I was born in Vietnam. My father was a prisoner of war in Vietnam. He flew with the South Vietnamese Air Force and with the U.S. Air Force.
Wow.
After Saigon fell in 1975, he was put in a prisoner of war camp, and he escaped and took my family to a refugee camp in Thailand. And then from there, we got adopted, quote unquote, more like sponsored, but kind of adopted by a parish, a Catholic parish in Buffalo, New York. And then we got on a boat. We were literally boat people.
Oh, so you still had to be boat people even if you were adopted or sponsored.
Well, yeah, yeah.
In
yeah.
that extent.
Wait, how old were you?
I was like 10 months old.
Oh, so you don't remember anything.
I was a baby. Yeah, I don't remember anything.
Okay. Yeah.
And then we wound up in Buffalo, New York. So I grew up in Buffalo, New York.
Mm.
Where are you from in Canada?
Nova Scotia.
Okay. I'm actually, my grandparents, before they passed away, my whole family is in Montreal. Well, right. Scattered across Canada. So my part of the family was the only part that grew up in the States.
Okay, like, yeah.
The rest of my family left Vietnam before all the like the big fighting happened.
Right.
And they settled in Canada. And then when my family finally escaped, because my dad was a pilot, he was in the war.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
they finally escaped, we went to Buffalo. So my whole family's in Canada. So
right.
For years.
And in French Canada, too.
French Canada. Well, we were they're
I'm
scattered
so
all
sorry.
Over.
No.
They're, we were an NHL family. Like, there was a stretch of, like, 7 years that we didn't speak to each other between, like, October and May.
All right.
And God forbid your team make it into the finals, like the Stanley Cup.
Well,
like,
that's right, because the Sabres and the Montreal Canadiens.
Sabres, the Canadiens. My brother moved to Boston, so he was a Bruins guy. Oh. I got family in Toronto, Ottawa, Winnipeg.
Your whole family's in one division.
Yeah.
Why didn't somebody just move to Vancouver just so they could own the West Coast? Well, actually, you're in Los Angeles now. So.
But there were years that we didn't speak to each other for like an entire season.
Wow. So you don't speak because of the NH.
Oh my God! Yeah. Oh my God!
Not because of other family issues.
Well, no, we have some of those family issues now, thanks to the last 4 years of previous presidency. But there was a year where the Sabres, the Bruins, and the Habs were all in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and it was just like, don't talk to me. Piss off, Grandpa. I don't want to see you until I graduate from high school.
Wow. Yeah. Some people are passionate.
Yeah. We were a serious hockey family.
Yeah. Man.
Wow.
To this day. Actually, one of my travel goals is to get to a game in every arena in the league.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So what's your number right now?
I'm at 18.
Okay.
Oh, right on. You know, this is actually one of the big questions that we usually like to try to bring up on our podcast. We always ask that's a great, perfect segue, because we always ask the comics how they like to spend their time.
It wasn't.
No, it wasn't at all. But how they spend their time on the road, and a few comics have said they love going to see the sports and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Baseball games and whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, would that be your number one activity
you're
touring around America?
If I can, actually, for a long time, I didn't tour unless it was hockey season.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
Like, that luxury? Fine. I got to go into hey, sorry. It's not the NHL season right now, but you still
that, well,
tour.
That was one of the, there was a year, 2012. I had planned this insane, like, 15-city tour. And every city we went to was either an NHL town or within an hour of an NHL town. And every date we did was either the day before or the day after a game in an arena I hadn't gone to. And this was book solid. I was, like, ready to go.
Yeah.
Do you remember what happened in 2012?
Well, other than the Olympics, I was living in London at the time. I was at the Olympics.
Something, another virus?
The NHL lockout.
Was there a lockout that year?
There was a lockout that year.
So you couldn't.
Okay. So I had a tour planned and the league locked out. So I was like, I even talked to my agent, was like, so you have a big fan base in Columbus? I'm like, I'm huge in Idaho. He goes, Ohio? I'm like, whatever, man. Send me, the Blue Jackets are playing. Just. I'm going to go. But then they locked out. And so now I had this tour. I'm like, I don't want to go to Winnipeg for no reason. My dad was like, you can go see your family. I'm like, again, I don't want to go to Winnipeg for no reason. So I had this tour. We had to do this huge stateside tour. It was with the GIs of Comedy, too.
Right.
Okay. And then we finished the tour. And then the Players Association agreed to a contract like the week after we finished the tour. I'm like, you motherfuckers.
Maybe it was all planned according to your tour.
Well, it was also the Mayan calendar.
The Mayan calendar.
So I was like,
Oh, that's right.
I wasn't sure the world was going to end, but I was prepared for it.
Okay. That's right. I remember that John Cusack film.
Yeah.
I remember that. That was a
terrible movie.
Well, you thought the first sign of the world ending was the NHL lockout. I was like, okay.
the players decided their contract.
Yeah, I was like, all right, the world's about to end.
And that was the first sign of the apocalypse. Yes, that's
in the Bible.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned family in Winnipeg, too, because it just says on the side, that's who's playing Montreal right now. So your family must be kicking off right now in the playoffs.
Yeah, there's a lot.
And you mentioned the GIs of comedy, which is a group of military veterans, right, that perform comedy. And you started that group, right?
Right.
So how did that happen? How did you, come up with the idea and all that stuff? You know?
So I was I'm an Army vet. Okay. Yeah. Combat wounded Purple Heart recipient, United States Army.
Yeah, wow, we got to talk about all this other stuff.
And
too,
I was medically retired from the Army after I got shot in Iraq. And then.
Wow. Okay, so wait. I mean, we can't just jump over. I mean, you're giving away. We're not gonna skirt over it. But we got to talk about it. Like, okay, so you got shot in Iraq. Right. Obviously, it's a war, but who did it? I mean,
his name was Jeff. Yeah. He was
I don't know how
pissy mood that day.
Jeff was that about the NHL lockout?
He was a soccer guy. Got tired of me talking shit about soccer. No, I was in the Army. I deployed to Iraq 2003, first year of the war.
How old were you at this time?
25, 24. Oh God, how old was I? I retired when I was 26, so.
Man, that's maybe. Nice, retiring at 26.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's not nice that you got shot.
I had to get shot in the head for it. Yeah, but
Ola, silver lining, Ramos over here. Must be nice. Tell us again about the headache you had. Is that what it was that made you retire?
A little bump up. My dad actually told my mom I hit my head on a door because she saw a photo of me with a bandage on my head.
So she didn't know.
He didn't want when I called him. After
so I guess we should clarify.
We're jumping all over the
yeah,
place.
Yeah, let's just.
So I deployed to Iraq in 2003. I was opcon to a team from the 5th Special Forces Group, and we went out on a mission April 3rd, 2003. It was a couple days after I got into Iraq. 4 days, actually, after I got
into Iraq.
We crossed the border on a Sunday, and my first mission outside
the border to where?
From Kuwait into Iraq.
Oh.
And my first mission outside the wire was on Thursday, April 3rd.
Because also, they don't give you, so right away as soon as you go in there, they, go. Like, they don't give you, a week of, I don't know. I've never been in there.
First we have a kegger down by the river.
Used to the time zone.
Well,
I don't know.
In his defense, he's right, because we got to Kuwait in January of 2003. The war didn't start till March.
Okay.
So we were in January, and we were in Kuwait ramping up.
Got it. So you were, okay.
Right.
And then the war popped off, I think, March 22nd.
Okay.
And about a week later, my team, because my unit got chopped off to a bunch of different units, meaning a team went over to work with the Brits, a team went to work for the 82nd Airborne, another team went to work for...
They like to help all the other ones?
Yes, augment with our particular set of skills, which is a weird thing to say, because...
Yeah, very taken.
Not taken. Not very taken. I was a radio guy.
You were the radio guy?
Yeah, I was a communication sergeant. So I was super smart on, I'm a nerd, so I was super smart on radios. I mean, I work on radio.
That's what my grandfather was.
That's great to know now. Yeah. I mean, it's much technology now.
Yeah.
So it's like...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's why I still have a career in radio.
Who has the laugh? But so you were okay, so you got 3 days after they send you with the...
He's on his first mission.
First mission. With who
you
were? Special Forces Group. Okay. So I was attached to them, and they took us out on a recon mission. And on that recon mission, we drove into a gunfight, and I got shot.
Wow. So you were just driving, and all of a sudden somebody started shooting?
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
Well, there's a lot more to it than that. There was already a gunfight happening, and we drove into it.
Oh, I thought I was reading, too.
But why?
A sniper bullet was, correct? That took in the head.
Yeah. So there were a group of Marines in that area already engaged in a firefight.
Okay.
But because the Marines didn't want to fucking radio and tell the rest of the...
They should have known, hey, we're getting shot. Don't come here.
Either they didn't, for whatever reason they didn't, or they weren't on the right...
frequency?
Yeah. That's the easy way of setting it, because it's secured communications.
Mm-hmm.
So either they weren't on the right secure frequency, or they just didn't radio us. We didn't know that they were engaged in a gunfight. So we drove into it. Oh, man. And so one of
they
the
were basically an FM. You guys were an AM.
Something like
and
that.
And you're like, what? Well,
you know what? That is was, a great way
like,
to put it.
They're like driving. They're like, well, we don't hear anything. Let's keep going.
That's a great way to put it. But so we were in a convoy with a couple of SF gun trucks, Special Forces gun trucks, and a couple of FID gun trucks. And it's one of the things people don't understand about the Special Forces mission is...
I mean, I'm not understanding anything you're saying okay. right now. Of your vocabulary, I'm like... I'm trying to, like, pretend I'm nodding, like, pretending I'm, like, fake. Yeah, I know what that is.
No, so
you're
FID,
still angry that there wasn't a good time before the war.
There was a good time before the war. So FID stands for Foreign Internal Defense. So okay. the mission of a Special Forces team, which is a 12-man team. It's a 12-man Special Forces ODA team. 12-man team that does the job of a 500-man regular infantry.
And you were one of those 12?
I was attached to that team.
Okay.
So their main one of their main jobs is called Foreign Internal Defense, which means they train the local indigenous population of a country to fight that war. So instead of sending in an entire group or battalion of Special Forces soldiers, you send in 12 to do, the door kicking and the counterintelligence, but their main job is to teach the local militia to fight that war. So they're augmenting the force.
Yeah, this is, by the way, I'm gonna put this as what I saw from The Last Samurai, when Tom Cruise goes in and helps.
Please,
it kind of like that? I mean,
kind of like
yeah. He's kind of like he would be one part of the Special Forces because he was teaching everybody how to use guns.
Correct. Yeah. So the problem is
that's where you learn all your military tactics.
Yes,
is it?
The Last Samurai, starring Tom Cruise.
Perfect.
So because their job includes training foreign internal defense forces. Mm-hmm. We were in a convoy with two or three Iraqi gun trucks. So the Marines, who were already in a gunfight, saw a truck full of Iraqis with AK-47s being trailed by a convoy of Army Special Forces. So they're like, well, we're being flanked. So they start shooting.
Oh.
Our guys start shooting. The guys that the Marines were shooting at in the first place start shooting.
Jeez.
And then it's a shit show.
Holy shit.
So everybody was shooting at each other. So you don't know who shot you?
Not officially, no. The
report
they don't
I
got.
Figure out if it was friendly fire or if it was.
Well, it was
the
from
enemy.
A 7.62. So that's a higher caliber round than American forces shoot. We shoot fire 5.56 out of an M4
so
or an M16.
Pretty sure it was the enemy then.
Yeah. So it was a 7.62. They know that.
And you were just a radio guy.
Yes.
I mean, but you were like also ready to.
Yes.
You know, it's not like you were. Like,
everybody's got a role.
Yeah. I was just the cook, as Steven Seagal was
saying.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to.
Yes.
But by the way, I also got shot in Afghanistan.
Oh, no, don't do this.
No, it's true. I mean, I did, you know, like the, you know, entertaining for the troops, you know, and. We're in
the gig didn't go well.
we were going from another base to another base, and we were flying, and then in this.
Oh,
like,
you
military,
mean you got shot at?
Yeah, I got shot at.
Okay, you did
shot.
Say you got shot.
Well, I mean, no, I didn't get shot. You know,
glad we're clarifying.
Would have been nice, and I would have been retired by this time. No.
Sorry, easy there, Edmund Francisco.
No, but I got we were flying, and then all of a sudden, like. There's like flares coming out of the plane. And I was like, and then all the guys who were military just grabbed their guns.
Yep.
And I was with like Byron Bowers and I forget his name, Trey. Oh, yeah. And we were like, we got scared. Yeah, shit. Byron was like, whatever.
I think sometimes they do that to put a show on. Too,
no,
because
the guys got like that. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, what I always remember is like, we asked this guy who was next to it. He's like, dude, aren't you like scared? Because we're like scared. Because I was like, fuck, I came here. To do shows and I'm gonna get killed. The guy's like, "Hey, if we die, we die." I was like, "Oh fuck!" Yeah. I'm like,
I went back to Iraq in 2008 to do stand up.
Yeah,
with two cats from one from Texas, Jerry
Rocha.
No, not Jerry Rocha. Jerry Garcia. I can't remember his last name. Chris something from Indianapolis. Anyway, so I was the only guy who had any like military training experience, and we were in a couple of Blackhawks flying back from a gig.
Uh-huh.
And from the corner of my eye, I see a flash. And then I grabbed my seat, and both Blackhawks banked hard.
So you knew.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So the birds banked, and then Jerry goes, what the fuck was that? I was like, I'll tell you when we get back, because you don't want to know right now.
Right? Well, so, that's what they told me, because when I they obviously when they were like, oh, no, that was nothing, you know. Yeah, and yeah. Then when I got here, yeah. They were like, no, if they threw flares, it's because they actually shot
at
me.
They threw flares to throw off the whatever RPG was firing at us.
Yeah.
So we landed, and he was like, what was that? I was like, it was an RPG. He goes, what's that? It's like a rocket-propelled grenade. He goes, don't they know we're comedians? I'm like, they don't. There's no smiley face on the side of the
Black Hawk. That one's okay.
It says U.S. Army. Doesn't have a fucking, yellow face with a smile on it. He's like, well, we're just comics. I was like, I don't give a shit.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
I've done a lot of I've done the decompression for the troops out in Cyprus and stuff like that. But they see sometimes they play. Well, that is, it's the opposite of what you wanted, which is the good time that you get after you're in theater from the war. They actually have to send a lot of the troops. It's a lot of setup in Cyprus, but it's to get them to decompress before they go back to their home countries.
Oh, got it. Oh, so I didn't get any of that.
A lot of,
didn't get any of that?
Nope.
The British might need it more than the Americans. Oh,
okay, yeah.
Because the British have a really bad reputation for going home. They, the spousal abuse and everything if they return during from theater. So I know you have that problem, too. Sorry, I wasn't at all trying to be low. So when the troops that we were with, they would do that sometimes as a prank to make us feel that we were under threat. They would admit it later on, after they get their one beer and are hanging out with us after the show. They're like, yeah, we weren't actually under threat. We just wanted to terrify you guys. And it fucking works.
Yeah. It was scary. Exactly that. Yeah. But that, so then you got, so after you got shot,
I was back to work in a week.
You were shot in the head.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
But, I mean, what?
Yeah.
Were they recommending that you at least do a little rehab and relaxation?
That week was my rehab.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. But somebody's pushing you, or you're going good?
No, it was me.
All you.
Yeah, I remember the night I got shot, I climbed in the back of our big, we call it LMTV. It's a big truck, basically. And I sat down with my team sergeants, and I was like, hey, guys, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel after today, but I'm going back to work tomorrow. They're like, at least a week. So,
because
I had 18 and 19 year old kids that were like just out of high school and basic training and advanced training who were like, shit, our sergeant just got shot like the fourth day. Like, if I felt like if I had left, if I had freaked out and left, well, those kids had no hope.
Right.
Because
so you did it. Okay.
So I was like, my job as an NCO, as non-commissioned officer, is to take care of these kids. That's one of my jobs.
So if
I leave, well, then they either don't have a leader or they're going to get chopped out to a different platoon or a different team. Those guys had
Which
more
is
shit
true,
because
when I went to there, that's one thing that kind of like a little shock for me was when I, after the shows, you would meet the military personnel, and they're like, some of them were like literally like,
they're babies.
Yeah, like kids, and I was like, wow, like kids, and I was like,
18 years old, they're babies.
They don't know what I mean.
Let's not forget at home that stand-up comedy is the hardest job in the world. Everybody,
it feels a lot like combat.
Sometimes. Yeah. Wow. And
well, buddy, thank you so much for your service. That's it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now it makes sense for you to be like, because I'm going like, why did you not? But you're like, no, I had to as a leader to these kids, and like, oh, okay. So that's really good of you to be able to be like, you know what? I have to stay for them so that's awesome. So then how did the whole GIS of comedy kind of like then idea started or like began?
So we'll fast forward to me moving to Los Angeles. I came home, I retired from the Army.
After how long time? How much time?
A year. I had a year left on my contract, but because I was combat ineffective, they were just like, don't do this anymore. That's the short way of saying what happened. I had a heart attack when I was 26.
What?
And my doctors at the VA said, hey, man, what?
Has nothing to do with the shot.
Oh, no, not directly. But, I came home. My roommate had been killed right before I left Iraq. I had friends killed after I got home. And I retired, and I was like, well, now what do I do? Because I just spent, the last decade of my life as a soldier.
When did you start it as a soldier and beating the military?
I enlisted when I was 18.
While
I was still in high school. I left right after high school. So now I was not in the Army anymore. I was drinking a lot,
you a military family? Then, if your father, your father was
my dad was, and grandpa. And
did you do it because of that?
Not directly, but partly.
Partly.
Yeah. I mean, it was. I mean, also, you gotta understand, my family came from a communist country where my father was a prisoner of war, fighting for freedom in his own country, and we got to come to the United States. Like, I got this opportunity to do this thing that, at some point, all of our families got the opportunity to do, but a lot of people have forgotten that. They've forgotten that 100 years ago, their families came from Ireland, or 200 years ago, their families came from England. Or their families, you know, like, they forget that this opportunity was given to them. And, but I am 40 years old, and that opportunity came 38 years ago. And my father was a prisoner of war. My grandfather was killed in the war. My uncle was killed in the war. So it's not something that I forgot. So it was partly, I'm going to give back to this country that has adopted me and given me the opportunity to literally tell dick jokes for a living. Like, I bought a house with money I used telling dick jokes. So I feel like,
so this is a house that Dick built.
Literally the
that
house that Dick built.
Have built.
Yes, this is the house that Dick's built. There's,
I mean, Dick's, several Dick's.
At least a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's, I mean, that's one of the reasons to join the Army. But then I got home, I drank, and I got fat, and I drank some more, and I got even fatter, and had a heart attack when I was like 26. And the doctor was like, "Hey, man, when was the last time you smiled?" I was like, 2002, before the war started. This was like 2006. So he's like, "You gotta." I remember my girlfriend at the time had to take me to the VA because I was like, "Ah, my fucking arm hurts. Like, my chest hurts. Something smells funny." She was a doctor at the time, so she's like, "Okay, well, we have to go to the doctor right
was
now."
Was it and the heart attack was due to just being depressed?
Depression, alcoholism, just like I was eating steaks just, every day. I mean,
so it wasn't something. So what's? I mean, it's funny because sometimes you think heart attacks. It's kind of like a thing that, you know, genetically
what
it happens.
His diet was really bad.
Yeah, no, that was how I'm saying.
If you've
it
seen
like,
pictures of me when I was 26, it's fucking wild.
Yeah, because you're like so in shape right now. So I don't, I'm always seeing, every time I, ever since I met you, you've always been like in shape. So I,
I mean, before I started doing stand up, I started like kind of getting my shit together. Yeah. Like I started playing in bands. Then I, you know, I was like, I don't like people, so I need to do a thing that I can do by myself.
This is a situation where you had to hit rock bottom before you went.
It very
much
was.
It's time. Now, now I can go back and climb out of this like, like a phoenix.
Exactly. I went on a vacation with a girlfriend, the same one that took me to the hospital, and there's a photo of us on a beach in Mexico, and I looked at that photo, and I was like, who the fuck is that? That is unacceptable.
And you were talking about your girlfriend.
Absolutely.
Okay, All right.
I was like, who is that guy with her? Where am I? Why am I taking this picture? But yeah, there's a photo of me, and there's a before and after photo of me. I think I posted one on my Instagram on my birthday this year, where it was like me at 26 or whatever it was. And I was like 200 pounds.
Wow.
And just, it was unacceptable as a soldier for me to look like that. And that's, I was like, all right, well, I got to get myself back in a literally fighting shape. So,
man, is there anything about you that's not inspirational? Because what the fuck?
Yeah, man.
serves this country.
I mean, I always feel bad like making jokes. I'm trying to like give it like, what about this? But then he goes back and says something he goes back and says something even nicer. And I'm like, wow, that joke sucked.
Holy shit.
It's like, fuck.
Francisco and I are going to go into a spiral of depression. What have we done?
Yeah, I'm always trying to be like, well, like
we could have skipped this whole thing. Remember when I was like, we're going to glance over the gunshot and go right to comedy. This was your fault.
This is the reason, like, I didn't advance on Last Comic Standing. I didn't have anything like this. I mean, like, well, I came from Venezuela and learned English.
And I'm here now.
I'm here now. And he's like, well, I got you. I was like, okay. But like, so then, okay, so then how did the whole, so after all this,
okay, so I started doing stand-up comedy. I was on the road for a while.
And that's something you always wanted to do, or just?
Nope, never.
Why did you pick stand-up?
So I loved stand-up comedy, but it was never a thing that I was like, I'm going to do this. It was never in my
wheelhouse. But you were a fan of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was 7 when I saw Delirious.
Okay.
Because my parents are terrible at their job, and they let a 7-year-old fucking watch Delirious. But, I loved doing comedy. So when I was in college, I took a class called Voice and Diction because I work on the radio, and this class was supposed to help you find your voice.
Nice. I wish I would have taken it.
So the final project was the teacher wanted you to take a scene from your favorite movie and do it in your own voice. Like my buddy Sean did a scene from Boiler Room or whatever. And I said, hey, I've always liked stand-up comedy. Can I try writing stand-up comedy? Can I do that as my final project? And he said, yeah, you got 4 months to do it. You know, because he gave us a syllabus day one, and he said, this is your final project. So I said, you got 4 months to do it. And it took me 4 months and 5 hours to write six minutes of material.
Yeah.
And
without trying it?
I still do my jokes when I write them the same way I did them then. I will write the jokes out, and then I will drive around and do the jokes out loud in my car in the voice of William Shatner.
Wow.
Because
that's a layered process.
Because then it's not me telling the jokes. It's William Shatner doing it. But I'm also finding the pacing and the pauses and the inflections.
That's a very unique process.
But I'm not hearing me do it. I'm hearing Shatner do it.
Yeah.
So that's how I did that in that class.
Yeah.
And, I was going to say, because that technically does mean that your first gigs were in front of a classroom, which I
technically,
think. That's a weird audience. That's not a comedy audience.
No, it was. It was a theater audience.
Students.
Mm. Yeah. But I don't remember it going well. But my buddy Sean, who is now, he's in Denver now. He was out here. He was a podcast producer out here for a while. He came on my old podcast and he was like, "You killed." I was like, "I don't remember that," because I blanked out.
Yeah.
I wish I had it on video. I've actually found. I wrote out. Like that set.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But it's word for word.
Yeah.
And it's, because that was my first time doing stand-up. But I found it. And it's fucking terrible. It is the worst shit ever. But he said I did really well. And then...
Can I just say that? Because I do have a health degree and everything, but I would rather speak for my end assignments in university. Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of verbal assignments and stuff. I had to do one which was the history of leisure. And I did the history of witchcraft.
Nice.
And it was kind of, and I went and got some dried ice and did an effect and had some Steve Vai music playing and had a few jokes. And I actually had a couple jokes that I've used in my stand-up career since then. But I relate to that story because for me in those classes, it was an option, though. You could write a paper or you could do a five-minute thing. And I found it interesting how few people would rather talk.
Well,
through their projects.
You know the saying, like, more people would rather die than have to stand up in front of an audience and talk. I mean, we are, by virtue of what we do, we're like
the exceptions.
The exception to the rule. So I did stand up. I did that. That was in college. That was my first time. I think I did a set at another comedy club once, and then Iraq happened, and then I deployed, and then nothing was funny for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came home, I started working on the radio. Back on the radio. And the guy that worked on the morning show with me owned a comedy club. And
this was where?
This was in Buffalo, New York. And it was my home comedy club. Because he came to me one day and he's like, hey, we need somebody to host radio station night. And it's literally just get on stage before the comic and goes, hey, welcome to 97 Rock Nights. I'm Tom. Here are your specials. Like, it's just a thing radio people do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he knew that, I liked comedy. So he gave me a shot. And then he would feed me jokes. And then I got a little better, and then a little better, until somebody finally took me on the road. And then I was a road comic for a little while. And then I moved to New York for a hot minute. I did not like the smell of the Hudson River in August.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm out. I came to L.A. to visit on vacation. A friend of mine from high school lived in Redondo Beach. So I came to visit just to see what the scene was like out here.
Mm-hmm.
Did my first spot ever at the store in the belly room.
Mm.
Noel El Grobly booked it. I got the gig off of Craigslist.
Oh, really?
It was a bringer. I didn't know what a bringer was.
Craigslist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on. They put gigs in
Craigslist. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I remember one.
Yeah.
Seen that, stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I learned more about the LA comedy scene all the time.
But it was...
It was under Casual Encounters.
Yeah. missed opportunities. So I did a set at the belly in the belly room. It had to be 2007. And They remember I was a road guy. Like, I didn't know what a bringer show was. I'd never heard of a bringer show.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, it's a bringer show, so just bring some people. I was like, I don't know anybody. I'm visiting. And I talked my buddy and his roommates into coming to see my set. And I still have this on video, and thank God that I do.
Nice.
But now, again, I'm a road comic, and I lived in New York for a little while, like fighting for spots there. And then I come to L.A., and the kid that went up before me, and I hand to God, I have this on video, and it's somewhere on my Facebook page. The kid before me ends his set with, hey, everybody, if you liked my set, do me a favor, give me a big round of applause because my agents are here. I thought it was a setup for a joke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he had papered the room with his friends because he had representation there. And he had an ascot on.
Oh,
it looked like a gayer version of Freddy from Scooby-Doo.
Wow.
And that's how he ended his set. And I remember thinking, if that's what comedy is in L.A., I'm going to fucking rule this town. So I went up after him. And it was, you know, they cheered because they were his friends.
Yeah.
The people who weren't were confused.
Yeah.
And I went up and I took a flamethrower to the Comedy Store. What I thought was a flavor, because I watched that video now, I'm like, this is terrible. Yeah. But it was also fucking 12 years ago.
Yeah.
But I also went up after a kid who asked people to clap for
him. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's,
so
like
after
Jeb
that.
Jeb Bush.
Oh my God, please.
Please applaud. Please applaud. Please applaud.
So I did that set.
Very important.
And I was like, well, this is the place I have to be. Because if that's the. Because in New York, I'm competing against Chris Rock. Fucking
Patrice
Colin
O'Neil,
Quinn, Patrice O'Neill, Jim Norton. Like, I could not get a spot in the city to save my life.
Yeah.
And then my first spot in L.A., I got to go up against this kid. Yeah. I'm like, well, I'm going back. And I'm taking all my shit, and I'm moving back here. And I did.
Yeah.
Went home. Like, I went back to New York, packed up my shit, went to see my dad in Buffalo. And I was like, hey, remember how I said I was moving to New York? Well, I'm moving to L.A. So
and what did he say?
He was like, my dad is the fucking, I don't know if he just gave up. Because
we're talking
for a
upstate
while.
New York where you were living, right?
Yeah.
So
Buffalo.
So it's actually, right. So that's, for anybody who doesn't know, that's being close to the Canadian border. But
I could see Canada from my apartment. Right. Literally see Canada. I look over the Niagara River and I could see Fort Erie. Right. So
he could see the free healthcare.
I still have a fake ID from high school because you only have to be 19 to drink in Ontario.
Oh, in Ontario, right?
Yeah. So I just. I have a fake ID from high school. It says I was 19.
That's so wild. I lived in Victoria for a while in British Columbia. I'm a military kid, so my whole family's military. So we always got posted every 3 years. But when I was in Victoria, I went to Seattle to get my fake ID. So we've each got these stories like sneaking over the border. Only I went from Canada to America because there was a guy in Seattle who would do the fake IDs. Then I could take it back to Canada to use it.
I have the greatest Tim Hortons story. So I'm from Buffalo. So Tim Hortons is a hot dog, or it's a coffee place. You know Tim Hortons.
Yeah.
The guy Tim Horton actually used to play for the Buffalo Sabres.
Oh,
anyway,
okay.
So we're from Canada and Buffalo, big Tim Hortons fan. So we did a gig at Fort Knox, Kentucky. Nowhere near Canada or Buffalo. We get in, and we go to the hotel, and we're like, hey, we need some coffee. Like, we just flew in. We got to go talk to the colonel. Like, where can we get coffee? And this lady goes, there's a place around the corner. Just go down the street, turn right. We go down there. And it's a fucking Tim Hortons on Fort Knox in Kentucky. Kentucky. It's Kentucky. No reason. There's no hockey team. There's nothing.
How many Tim Hortons are there in America, period?
Like nine. Eight of them are in Buffalo.
Yeah, exactly.
So me and another guy from the GIs were both from Buffalo.
Okay.
And we are freaking out at this point because we both live in LA. We haven't had Tim Hortons in a decade. We're like, why is there a Tim Hortons here?
Yeah.
And we grab the manager. We're like, we need to know. And apparently, so while some troops were from Fort Knox were in Afghanistan, they were working with the CFB, Canadian Forces, the Canadians had a mobile Tim Hortons. And when the Canadians left, they took that mobile Tim Hortons with them. So the troops from Fort Knox fucking boycotted. They're like, we're not working until, I don't know how they did this because it's the army, but they were like, we're going to, do the
get
minimum
Tim
until
Horton?
We get a Tim Hortons.
Oh, no, jeez. This isn't going to help. Canadians are going to start to think they're sane.
And
the Canadians with their Tim Hortons addictions are going to go, we're justified now.
Yeah. Well, the colonel was like, Okay, listen, I'll tell you what. You guys kick ass the rest of this deployment. There'll be a Tim Hortons waiting for you when you get back.
Wow.
So he kept his word. The soldier's like, cool. We'll finish this mission. We'll kick ass, and then there's going to be a Tim Hortons when we get back. So there's a Tim Hortons on Fort Knox, Kentucky because of the Canadians.
Wow. See that?
Yeah.
It's magical stuff, the old Tim Hortons. Man.
So anyway, I moved to L.A. I did that set. I moved to L.A. in May 2008 to do stand-up comedy, to make a living as a stand-up comic, which I didn't know you can't do.
In L.A., In New York, you can. Yeah.
Yes, you can.
You
in
can
York,
live off, that. Because you don't have to, as people don't know, in stand-up in New York, there's so many spots, and you make a decent money, and you can live. But here, no.
I always have to tell people, this is a showcase town. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that. It's
which
showcase.
Is a way for people to use. So,
we're going to use you for free.
Yeah, in New York, if you do 5 or 6 shows a night, you're making $100 a spot.
Yeah,
you make
a multiply it. Yeah, you can live,
But I didn't know that because I was a road comic.
Yeah.
And I lived in New York. So I did not know that you could not actually make a living.
Yeah.
Doing comedy.
Just being here.
Yeah. So I did the actor thing. I did the consulting thing. I did some military consulting. I worked on some movies. And I went back to work on the radio.
Okay.
To
as a host? DJ?
It was like a part-time reporter and DJ.
Okay.
And then an opportunity came up on K-Earth 101, which is the big station out here. They were doing a benefit for the Bob Hope USO at LAX with the Laugh Factory.
Uh-huh.
And they were looking for the world's funniest service member. So it was like, hey, a bunch of comics or a bunch of veterans who want to be comics, they're going to compete, right?
Nice.
They didn't know that I was
you're actually
touring
a comic. Yeah.
Comic. So it was like a bunch of dudes who wanted to do stand-up.
And then you.
Me. And I was the ringer. So I won 3 years in a row.
Wow.
And the third year they went, you can't do this again. Like, you can't keep coming back because you're going to win.
Yeah.
So I stopped. But after that first year, because one of the things I wanted to do after I left the Army was like I wanted to keep serving. I was an NCO. I was a non-commissioned officer. My job was to take care of soldiers. So I wanted to go back to Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever and perform for the troops because there hasn't been a name in military entertainment like Bob Hope since Bob Hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get the Robin Williams and the Rob Riggles. And, you know, you get dudes going back, but there hasn't been a Bob Hope. I mean, for Christ's sake, it's called the Bob Hope USO.
Yeah.
At LAX. So I had met some comics that night who were veterans.
Yeah.
So I got this idea in my head for a group of comedians who were military veterans. Because, you know, as comics, the best way to relate to an audience or the best way to get laughs is if you can get the audience to relate to you.
Of course.
And you make your material relatable. Well, I was in Iraq when I had entertainers coming to perform for us. And it was really hard for an 18-year-old to relate to a stoner comic from New York City who was over there.
Yeah, you're talking about stuff that has like, dude, I just got shot yesterday.
Like, so when I decided, hey, this is a niche. Like, there's no group of comedians that are all veterans with combat experience. I mean, I have combat experience. I think 2 or 3 of our guys have combat experience. But I decided I want to put this group together and I wanted to make it a thing. And then I didn't know how to do it because I was like new to LA.
Yeah.
I didn't know anybody. I wasn't passing any clubs. This is how long ago this was. John Lovitz Comedy Club.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
That was just closing when I first moved here.
Oh, okay. So the stage was you were basically like 10 feet above the audience.
And 20 feet below the other two floors.
It was so weird.
Yeah. It was it was very weird, but it was right over here.
In Universal, City. Yeah,
and it was I can say this now because it's not open. And it doesn't fucking matter. It was the worst fucking club.
It wasn't.
It was a good club, but it was like to hang out. You couldn't hang out.
And it's reopening, ladies and gentlemen. It's
and here's John Lovitz. But it was it was $20 to park.
Yeah, it was.
And
too
you had
much.
To park way over here. And
also, like, it was funny because you would think, like, oh, a lot of foot traffic is going to come. Nobody would come because everybody's there to go to Universal Studio stuff. Yeah. It's like nobody wants to do
because
that was it used to be the B.B. King.
Used to be B.B. King's Blues Bar.
So that's why. So
That's yeah, why which, the setup was the way it was.
The way it was, yeah.
But so. I made some good friends, and I learned. It's where I met all the Latino comics who all called me Thomas.
Ah, yeah.
Just they, I was like, it's Tom. They're like, Thomas. But that's where I met the first, or the second GF comedy, because I'm the first one.
Can I guess? Jose Sardui?
It was Jose Sardui. Yeah, yeah. I was there on a date, and
you know, at the club.
Yeah, well, we were at Universal.
Oh, got it.
And then I was like, "Hey, you know," she was like, "Aren't you a comic?" So we went over there.
Got it.
And we popped in, and there's this Cuban guy on stage, mm-hmm. and he was pretty funny. And then he starts talking about being in the Air Force, and I went, "Well, this is, you know, I got this idea in my head, and I needed mm-hmm. to find," because the other comics that I'd met at the Balboa thing, they were very green.
New, yeah, yeah,
very good.
Yeah, you need people that have done it, but also are in the military.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, and that was. At the time, pretty hard to find.
Yeah.
Now it is. They're being fucking
now there's like a lot.
Cat.
Yeah, yeah. It's like there now are, you meet so many now.
Yeah. There are two groups that spun off of mine.
Oh, really? I you're like I was going to say like a singer. Like, I don't know, something. Like a singer, like a band, and then.
Solo artist? No.
Yeah.
Well, I fired some people.
Oh.
But so I approached him. I actually left my date. I was like, I got to go talk to this guy. Really. So I went over to Jose. I told him what I was doing, and he was new. He was new to town. He's
yeah.
only been in town for a couple months, and I was in town for like 2 years. But for that first 2 years, I was doing TV shows and movies and shit like that. So I was basically new to the stand-up scene.
Yeah.
So I said, hey, man, I want to do this thing. He gave me his number, and we connected. And then I started recruiting a couple of other guys.
Nice.
And that was 2010. And then by 2012, we did our first stateside tour. We did a bunch of stuff here in L.A. We did, like, the improv. And I mean, our very, very, very first show was the Ventura Harbor Comedy Club.
Mm-hmm.
And that was to get ready for our big show at Lovitz.
right.
That we actually sold out all
oh,
three
wow.
floors. Because it was,
wow.
like, it was a niche thing at the
yes.
time. It was, like, a bunch
and
of
And you
military.
Would get, like, a bunch of military
oh,
people to come.
Oh, yeah. I had, the recruiting battalions and
wow.
all that stuff. So we oh, did that. Cool. And then we got some hot press from, like, the AP and CNN, ABC News, and a bunch of other folks did stories on us.
Nice.
And then we did a little stateside tour, like Jersey and then Texas.
Yeah, so that brings up the question then. You put in a lot of road miles and stuff doing that tour, and then you also tour as a musician as well.
Yeah.
You perform as a musician. Yep. So I'm dying at it because we when we have our musical guests on, I love to ask.
And I was a music comic for a while.
Oh, were you? Wow. Okay. So,
really?
So,
yeah.
So transporting that guitar around yeah. and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Did it, like, were you, actually, we had some theft stories. We've had a few, like, was it a pain in the ass? Did you find being a musical comic, like, could you couldn't wait to shed the guitar?
There was there's a huge reason that I stopped doing musical comedy.
Because you got to bring all your shit.
You got to bring your gear. You got to show up early. You don't know if the club's got the right equipment. You don't know if their
yeah.
sound guy's got a DI box.
You actually have to have
right.
a sound check. You know, you get,
yeah.
like, as a comic, you get, like, you want to do a sound check? I'm like, no,
yeah,
I don't.
Tap,
as long as
yeah.
the mic works, I'm
right.
good.
Yeah. yeah, my first minute on stage is my sound check.
Exactly.
Yeah. I literally, you know, and
if
you can
I
even make it
mic,
funny if you have to, or
yeah.
like,
yeah,
whatever you can. Yeah.
But it was a huge pain in the ass. I mean, Stephen Lynch is like one of my heroes, one of the most amazing music
he's brilliant.
Comedians. Like I met him at a show in Buffalo, and he's the one to turn me on to music comedy because he found out I was a guitarist. He's like, "Yeah, colleges pay a shit ton of money for musical comics,"
yeah.
mm-hmm. which was fine if you're doing a show at a college and turning around and leaving. But like on the road, if I'm going to a club,
yeah.
I'm out on the road for. You know, fucking 3-4 weeks at a time,
mm-hmm.
And again, it's my early days, so I didn't have a huge chunk of material. I was like,
mm-hmm.
music could take up 15 minutes of my act,
and then what?
And
else?
Then yeah. I gotta fucking stretch out the four
yeah.
bits that I have.
Yeah.
But then I got to a club, and they didn't have a sound guy, or their other input didn't work, or for whatever technical reason. The guitar wasn't going to happen. I'm like, well, there's half my set. And I wasn't good enough at the time to go, well, I've got another 30. Like, now I can walk into a club and they're like, hey, do you want to do 20 minutes? Yes. I can fucking
yeah.
pull 20 minutes
Very
out of my back
freeing,
pocket.
Isn't it?
Yes.
You don't have to.
But, like, when I had if I was traveling around with a guitar.
It was your, like, you had to have it.
Right.
Because if you lose it, then you're
yes.
fucked, right?
Yeah. And then I got to worry about how, like, is my voice going to be okay to sing? Have I been drinking? I was smoking at the time, so. That was
right.
hard, and I was tuning things down. But then if I was, like, playing with my band, I had to tune it a different way. it was a shit show. Like, I love music comedy if it's good. Like,
right.
Stephen Lynch, fantastic.
Yeah.
Comics who know four chords and play parodies, fucking
yeah, like,
cause hate it.
I see, because I
fucking
yeah.
the worst shitty comedy. Do you do that?
No.
I'll fucking beat you with this microphone right now. I will strangle you with this microphone.
I just realized that I look like a musical comedian.
He does look like
he does.
No, definitely not.
No, that's what I was going to ask, because it's like, I don't know who Stephen Lynch is.
Okay.
But yeah, the only musical comedy that I know is the one that you just described. Right? Yeah. The one that I've seen is like Brian, and then say that, you know, which is kind of like, you're not doing music. It's
right.
more like you're pairing your jokes with something else.
Stephen Lynch was a classically trained musician who is unbelievably talented on a guitar. He might as well be the Eddie Van Halen of guitar comedy.
Wow. He's very funny. He does one-man shows.
He was actually, he stopped doing comedy for a while because he got the lead in the Broadway production of Wedding Singer.
Oh, wow.
So he's an amazing singer, an incredible songwriter, a great musician, and an unbelievable guitarist.
Yeah,
and as a guitarist, I mean, I play in bands. I have literally 44 guitars. I grew up
43. I'm taking one.
They sit literally sitting on my bed.
Great! I can't wait to see the Francisco Ramos musical act.
No, I want to take it just to have.
He's got three chords.
I'm not gonna use it. I'm gonna be like, this was owned by Tom Trent.
Oh, you could do a great song about words.
Yeah, but as a musician, like an actual musician, like I grew up watching Eddie Van Halen and Richie Sambora and Steve Vai. And
yeah, you know music.
Yeah, I was a shredder. So when I see not just comedians, anyone who's just like, I know four chords and I can play most of the songs from the 80s. All right, cool, but don't.
Yeah.
That's
the thing I think with stand-up too. Like, I think when people like that are not stand-up or whatever, you know, they see stuff and they're like, oh, this is, I can do that or whatever, you know, and then stand-ups, I've done it, you know, professionally, like us, for a long time, you know, it's like we see stand-up and we see somebody doing it and we're not laughing, but we know, oh, they did that. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool how they took this. You know, like we,
right.
which is what I feel like, you know, professional musicians do when they hear a song or they, you know, they just go like, they're just listening to other stuff that I'm not even
right.
paying attention to, like, oh, why, the way that they did this stuff and the bridge
yeah.
or whatever, you know, all this stuff, which is like, which I think is what you see, what you're saying, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Steven and maybe Bo Burnham are the only comics I can think of off the top of my
Bob,
head.
Oh, Bob, he's also, yeah. Bob Burnham is also, oh yeah, because he's a pianist.
Yeah, he's a pianist.
I'll tell you what, a very funny musician actually comes to my mind, because Ben Folds is hilarious live.
Yeah.
And it's quite
John
quite
Mayer
funny
is fucking hilarious,
yeah, so there's,
too.
So there's a lot of
weirdly, and that
comedy,
upsets me
but they're
so
professional.
Much. They're professional
but they're mostly
yeah, yes.
musicians, yes.
But,
and they're not calling themselves stand-up. I mean,
they wouldn't call themselves stand-up. Yeah. I don't think Stephen Lynch I've never heard Stephen Lynch call himself stand-up. I know that I've seen a couple of his one-man shows and stuff, but he's just a unique entity.
He's an incredible. Like, he's got a special that he shot at the, what's that place over on Wilshire? Not the Wiltern. It's a little closer to like the La Brea Tar Pits.
Mm. No idea.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so he shot a shot a special down there, and it's fantastic. I love it. But
Troubadour.
No. But like, if you're, for me as a musician, if you're going to use
an instrument,
shitty. Yeah, if you're going to use an instrument,
be
proficient at it.
Yeah,
because
right.
for me, when you play four chords or just play one chord and talk over it, then it's a prop.
Yeah,
then
yeah,
it's
no,
just
yeah,
a prop.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think this is kind of the point that we want to get to with the traveling and everything, because that's
I stopped
that
doing
value
it because
of having
of,
that
yeah.
guitar on the road with you has to be an ultimate
yes.
you know, trump card, and then you discard it, you get that freedom, and you're like, okay, these words and not having to haul this thing and
yeah.
pay excise charges every time I go on a plane or anything like that is a huge benefit.
It's literally a weight off my shoulder.
Yeah.
Because I'm not hauling around this guitar and this cable and pedals and tuners and whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I literally have an $11,000 acoustic guitar that's like, when I play out with my band and I'm making money with my band.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Then that's, it's worth it. But if I'm...
But you're working and you're, that's, yeah. you got hired to
right.
play. Yeah.
But if I'm hauling out a multi-$1,000 guitar to do stand-up, that's not,
awesome.
It's not like...
Yeah.
Yeah,
unless I'm doing an entire set of music, which
yeah,
at one point I thought
for
about
for a specific
but,
show or
right.
whatever. But yeah, I think so. I wanted to also go back and traveling because you were traveling the GIs of comedy, like with traveling with like Is it four people that were in it or five? Or
There are as many as 14 now.
But when you will travel at what at every, you know, for a tour, it would be
I would pick, you know, I'd send out teams of four or six.
Oh, so you would do a different team.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Depending on, like, is it going to be an Army base? Is it going to be an Air Force base? Is it going to be some, like, if it's a base that I've, you know, I was stationed at and I want to get back there, I'll go. If it's an Air Force base, I'll send Jose. If we're going to a Navy base, I'll send the Navy guys.
So I was going to ask, like, in terms of traveling as a group, like, it's like how, you know, was it, how annoying or how hard it is to, like...
It's the worst shit in the world.
Oh, okay.
Right. Like, people say hurting comedians is like hurting cats. It is not.
Well, I can open, cats are nice.
I can open a can of tuna, my cats will come running.
Yeah.
The amount of cocaine and hookers I need to fucking wrangle comedians is...
It's, you're opening a can of tuna and I'm not hungry, man.
Yeah. Plus, I got two vegans on the fucking tour with me. So, yeah, they're definitely not eating. But it's... I think one of the reasons I got burned out from being on the road...
Yeah.
I've talked to Enrique about this.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't
it's
just
tough
a comic.
Being on the road. You were a manager, a road manager,
the producer, the travel agent, the dietitian. You know, because again,
and that's annoying too because I feel like you can't even concentrate on that much on your stand up because like you're dealing with all the other stuff and it's like you can't actually.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And then I got burned out.
Yeah.
I got to the point where like I don't want to travel anymore, and I would send out the teams without me. I would literally like. Two overseas tours. I was like, guys, go without me because I can't. Mm. I mean, I was also running things back here. There was
you weren't like organizing the administrative stuff, but you weren't like at least over there like dealing with all the little everyday stuff.
I sent a group to Iraq. I sent them to Afghanistan. And while they were gone, I got a call from the Pentagon. They were like, oh, hey, we have an Iraq tour for you. I was like, they're not even back from Afghanistan yet.
Wow.
And had I been there with them, that would have... fallen onto a voicemail that I would have gotten 2 weeks later after I got back. So, again, I'm not doing the comedy part of the comedy business. I was doing the business part of the comedy business.
Yeah.
But also, while I'm on the road, while I'm traveling back, and I was so stressed out, I couldn't write because I wasn't doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
I was just running the tour.
Yeah.
And then get on stage for 20 minutes, go back to my home hotel room, go to sleep.
Work and stuff.
So it wasn't the road wasn't.
It
fun
wasn't
anymore.
Fun. Yeah, I know it was funny because that's the thing I think we talk about with comics and stuff like that, like how to make it fun to being on the road, like stuff that you do, you know, or you were saying that you like to, you know, you plan your tour doing like the NHL, but you know, like I think that's the key. I think it's got to be fun to be on the road, especially because as a comic, you know, you were doing a group tour, but like. When you're by yourself, you know, it's tougher.
Right.
You know, and if you're doing all that stuff, plus not even like, you know.
Not even getting to go see the things I wanted to see.
Yeah, then it just becomes like, then it just becomes like, why am I even doing this kind of
thing? But also I was married for the last 5 years.
That'll do it.
Yeah, I mean, I just got divorced, but it's like, I didn't want to be away from my wife. I bought a house.
Yeah.
I like my cats. I like sleeping in my bed. I have a gym that, that's one of the other things. Like, when I'm on the road...
There's no gyms.
Yeah, just to the psychological relief of working out.
Yeah.
Like, there was a gym. We were in North Dakota in May, and there was a snowstorm, and the gym was a mile away from where we were staying. The only way to get there was to walk.
Ugh.
So I had to run in the snow to the gym that wound up being closed.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That was Rocky. Part of
it. Yeah. But also, you know, when I was young and on the road, I was just fucking my way up and down the East Coast.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Don't sleep with that waitress. Well, now I'm going to sleep with that waitress.
Yeah, you put it in a comic's mind, they're not going to shake the
Well, box. When you're younger, it's different because it's like, and plus you have so much more energy, too, to like fucking do everything.
We did a gig in Wyoming at 5:30, and we were in our hotel rooms at 7, and it was the most glorious thing. I was like, I'm going to be asleep by 7:30. But I wasn't, because they didn't fucking tell me that base was haunted. And the whole fucking night, I was like, I'm going to fucking die in goddamn Wyoming.
Oh,
this might be the perfect segue to the superstition
question, because we
do often ask, and now that you've mentioned that you feel that you were actually on a haunted base, because this is changing, because I usually like to guess if our guests are superstitious while they travel, or not, like if you need a special item with you, a lucky item or mm-hmm. something like that. And I was going to guess no, but now that he's mentioned haunted base, yeah. I'm going to say yes, we are dealing with a superstitious traveling
or do
comedian.
You or another thing, do you bring, if you're not that, then do you bring anything sentimental or of value with you when you travel?
I have two superstitions.
Okay. Here we go.
Anytime I travel, really anytime I leave the house, I keep a challenge coin on me. I have literally dozens. I have more challenge coins from being a comedian than I do from being in the military.
What's a challenge coin?
So a challenge coin, we have a tradition in the military.
Which, by the way, I was funny because I was going to describe it. And
go ahead.
I was like, no.
No, no, please, I would like to hear this. No, Francisco. No, please, I would like to hear this.
No, but I stopped myself.
I genuinely would like to hear you describe
it. I stopped myself. I have an idea what it is now.
No, I stopped myself because I was like, what are you doing? Like,
I would like to hear you describe it.
It's a coin that you get when you challenge somebody.
No, when you go in, I mean, the base commander gives you the coin.
In lieu of giving like a medal or a ribbon, okay. Which is something that requires sometimes literally the act of Congress, to say, here, good job for whatever you're doing. And it's not just for comedians or musicians. I mean, soldiers.
Oh, they also get them?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you know, you do a good job in the Secretary of Defense happens to be at your base while you win whatever competition. In lieu of getting a medal, because you're not going to get a medal for
everything.
You'll get a coin from a commander or the Secretary of Defense or the President or the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So literally anybody can have a coin. Like I have my own personal challenge coins as a civilian, but usually it's commander on up. So captains, colonels on up. But literally anybody can have a coin. And when you do a good job, or to say thank you, instead of giving you a big plaque, like I've got fucking plaques all over the place, but they'll just give you a coin. What they'll do is they'll shake your hand, and they'll have the coin in their hand, and that's how they hand it off.
I wonder if I've received a challenge coin and then didn't think anything of it. I was like, what's this thing?
Well, at least the way we do it in the Army was you keep a challenge coin on you, and if you're out at a bar, and this is why it's called a challenge coin. If someone throws down their coin, whoever has the highest ranking coin doesn't buy a round. Whoever has the lowest ranking coin buys a round. If you don't have a coin on you, you are fucked for the night. So if I'm out here and out at a bar with a bunch of military guys, and someone throws down like a colonel's coin, a full bird colonel's coin, well, I pull out my 3-star because nobody in LA is going to beat a 3-star coin. So I got a coin from. I have several coins from 3-star generals.
Right.
I'm gonna throw that down. But if I'm in D.C., if I throw a 3-star coin down, that means dick because it's Washington D.C.
Yeah.
Any swinging dick could have a coin from the president, the vice president, Joint Chiefs of Staff. So,
I got one from George Washington.
So don't go drinking.
I never pay for drinks.
I have one from. I mean, my highest ranking coin is the Secretary of Defense, William Cohen, and I got it in a poker game from him.
Really?
Tokyo. Wow. Which is a fucking wild.
Because you lost? He lost?
He lost.
And he gave
in a big way.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I was working at the embassy in Tokyo on a mission. And the embassy is headed by the Marines. There's a Marine detachment there. And the Marines were playing poker every night. So I got in. It was me and a couple of Army guys. And we were playing poker with the Marines. Now, a bunch of servicemen drinking. We all have weapons on us. Probably not the best situation. So three dudes in black suits like come into our room, and all of a sudden we're like, everybody's fucking strapped. Like everybody's ready to go. Shotguns, whatever.
Right.
Here walks in Secretary of Defense William Cohen, and all of a sudden we're like, shit, sir. Like where everybody's standing at attention.
Yeah.
Like it's fucking 10:30 at night. What's the Secretary of Defense doing here? I guess he was in there for a fucking meeting or something somewhere. And he goes, I hear there's a raging poker game. We're like, yes, sir. Can I get in on it? I'm like, yes, sir. My buddy comes out of the other room with three bottles of like fucking vodka. And all he sees is like a bunch of dudes in black suits and us holding our weapons. He's like, I don't know what's fucking going on here, but I'm leaving. So we're playing poker with the Secretary of Defense, and he is terrible, or he's losing on purpose. I don't know.
Right.
But it's heads up, me and him, and he's got two pair and I got a full house. He's like, all I got is my coin. I was like, I will take that. So I didn't get it for, you know, the regular way doing
but
a good
you
job.
Still got it.
I still got it.
Hey, it still counts, baby.
So you have that coin and then what else? You have another
two superstitions.
So I keep a 3-star coin on me, and even this is on the road and here in LA. Anytime I perform, I only wear two pair of lucky socks. Like, I don't go on stage unless I'm wearing one of these.
That's super unique.
That's very athletic.
Frequently comics will say some sort of clothing. This is my first socks.
Answer.
I haven't heard socks. I hear people have lucky shirts or a lucky belt. Or, you know, a watch.
I used to do the shirts and stuff like that when I started, but then I was like, "Wow!"
But this is very interesting. How do you arrive
so
at these socks?
The same socks?
Do they happen sometimes to be on your feet? Are they on your feet at a lucky time, or did you just decide these are the
most comfortable? But is it the same brand, or you just like have like 20 of those? Or
the first pair of lucky socks were Buffalo Sabres socks.
Okay.
I bought myself when I was home in Buffalo, and it was. I was wearing them one night, and it was a set that I was, like, nervous to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up just annihilating the room. And I was like, that was cool. And then the next night, because I was on the road and I didn't have access to laundry.
Yeah.
And I wore them again. Again. Crushed.
Wow.
So I was like,
Gotta be the socks.
Well, I tried an experiment. I did not wear the socks that night. And it was the most mediocre, meh.
That's how it starts. Yeah.
So the next gig, I wore those socks, and then I fucking killed.
Wow.
So I would only wear, and I wore those socks on stage for like years until they were literally falling off my feet.
Without washing them. You mean
I would have to wash them.
Okay,
but I could be on the road literally.
Sometimes you would go between gigs without washing them.
Yeah,
because I had no choice. Because you're only having two pairs.
Now I have two pairs.
Now you have, right.
But originally it was one pair of Buffalo Sabre socks.
Yeah. Okay.
And I wore them to death. Like they are, I had a burial ceremony for them. There were fucking holes. Years I wore these socks.
Honestly. Wait, and our girls going like, wait, why do you keep wearing the same socks? What's going on? Like,
Did you see me on stage tonight, baby?
As long as my pants are coming off, it didn't matter.
Yeah, no woman's
I'm sorry,
gonna be
like,
concerned.
A repeated girl that you thought I'd be like,
I think I was single at the time.
Oh, okay.
But now, okay, yeah, I was single at the time when I had those Sabre socks. And eventually, like, I was nervous for a long time.
That would be funny telling a girlfriend. No, I'm not putting on different socks. My first love is the stage, darling. I don't want to. I'm not cheating on her.
It'd be funny to be like, look, it's between me and the socks. And he's like, it's like a Curb Your Enthusiasm.
See you later.
Or Seinfeld. I'm going to go for the socks.
But I went like 6 months without lucky socks, and it was nerve-wracking every time. But you did good. I did okay. There were a couple of like good nights, but I couldn't repeat the process until I found. I'm a big comic book fan, DC Comics specifically. I'm a big Flash fan.
Okay.
So I found a pair of Flash socks, and it was a two pack, pair of red with the black Flash, and a pair of black and red with the yellow.
This is a great superstition.
Yeah, I mean, very specific.
Yeah, for a man who's taking a sniper bullet to the head to go, but then I won't go on stage without my lucky Flash socks.
I won't go on stage without wearing the Flash socks. They have their own space in my drawer.
Wow.
So when I have my regular gym socks and my going out
socks.
What about
if you have to do a one in the beach?
Oh, I will wear my socks on the beach.
Oh,
don't
you
think
will.
I won't.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I tried this one thing one time because I have two pairs. There's the black and the red. I wore one black and one red just to see what happened.
Yeah.
And the left side of the room killed. Right side of the room?
Come on. All right. I'd have been like, okay, this is getting, I think, I'm going like, all right, now you have to go to a therapist because you're just just imagining shit now.
But those are my, like, I will not go on stage, whether I'm doing stand up or playing with my band, without wearing my lucky socks. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a night where.
You got it down to two.
I do have,
well,
yeah,
that's,
luckily.
That's a very small number, I would think.
Yeah. Because it was, I got the pair on together. And there was a night where up at Levity, because you know they have the bar next door.
Yeah.
I opened for Nemer at 6 at 7 o'clock. I did a set, got
on,
changed.
On which one, Irvine?
Oxnard.
Oxnard.
I did a set, did stand up, 20 minutes, opened for Nemer. Walked next door, got changed, got on stage with my band. And then the socks were so fucking
wet.
Soaked
from
like jumping around for an hour, playing rock and roll. I had to put on the other pair of socks and go back to the comedy club and do stand up again and then go back and do another set with my band.
Wow.
But yeah, lucky socks.
Lucky socks. And then, you know, we're almost getting to the end, but I wanted to ask, because you were traveling so much, as you know, because of comedy, music, and military. Is there anything that you have taken from other parts of the world that you would love to bring to back to the U.S., like a custom or like a thing or like a cultural thing, or you know? That,
yeah,
you
any
know,
anything traditional from another country that, that you're born witness to, and you're going, I wish they would do more of this in America.
The food in Italy and Spain, fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like we went to Naples. They took us to dinner in Naples, and it was a legit 10-course meal. And I was like, I literally cannot eat anymore, guys. They're like, but here's the dessert pizza.
We
just had a dessert pizza. They're like, but this is another one. We're like, we are grown men who can't
eat
anymore.
Dessert pizza. Why? It's two things. It's two things.
No, is that down to the ingredients or
I think
or that or the style of the approach of it
That's
being all
question.
These small meals and
I
stuff
think
like that? It's like,
because so I'm gonna like just quickly interrupt you, but like I feel like in Italy and Spain, because it's you know, I'm from Venezuela and we have like a very obviously Spanish,
just like Italy.
No, but it's like a lot of immigration and influence of the culture,
no,
and like food
pizza,
is
though.
Very like important.
Right,
you know, it's like a sit down with a meal, which is like when I move here and the complete opposite is the U.S. is like. Like it's lunch and quick, it's fast. Like lunch, like you gotta go quick. You eat in your desk, you know. And so
I do think it was a lot of that. That very, like we all sat down. It was a leisurely. Like they were not in a rush.
Yes.
They were just like, here's the first course. An hour and a half later, here's the third course. An hour later after that, here's the seventh course. I'm like, guys, we can't. We have a show tomorrow.
Yeah,
like, I can't keep doing this.
That full immersive experience.
But it was but it was also delicious.
Yes.
It was not
fresh,
like,
and
it
it's
was fresh.
Fresh.
Everything tasted like it popped in your mouth.
Yeah.
Nothing seemed processed.
Yes.
It was just so flavorful and delicious. And it wasn't like they brought us pizza. And we're like, we're Americans. We have pizza. We never had pizza like
another,
this before.
You hear that, America? You need to eat better. I think Americans
more fresh stuff, and relax and take your time.
Yeah,
and have
siestas.
Fun.
Oh, siestas! Bring those back. Those over here. I'll take
those
them.
Are great. Yeah, I mean, that's cool. I like that. That's
The meals and portions are huge. My parents are very sweet because when they do the snowbird thing from Canada, come down for
Florida.
The winter months and. And my mom is always like, oh, honey, it's America. I just let your father order, and I have some of his. And that's all they do, because they know that it's going to be this big, gross, one-off portions.
Death by chocolate.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, man.
Wow.
And this is fun, guys.
Man, it was a lot of fun.
Bed.
I got to say, I'm absolutely in awe of you, especially like since from the start of this podcast, like just – your life story, like from, you know, with your father being a prisoner of war and then refugee status coming over to America, boat people, for lack of a better term. So impressive. And then choosing to serve the country that you grew up in. I mean, your story's blown my mind, man. And we can't thank you enough for joining us on the podcast. I mean, Francisco, if you don't have anything else to ask,
please tell me about challenge coins.
About what?
Challenge coins? Yeah. No.
what we do have, Tom, on the way out the door, we always ask our guests if they have one final piece of like travel advice that maybe your family could have handed down to you, or that you've learned yourself, or you know, basically.
He kind of gave us one. Don't fly, drive.
Yeah, he's,
you know.
Well, yeah.
But if
I mean,
another one.
I've learned tons off.
Yeah.
Tonight, but
if you have another one, just like a that people can, you know, be like, hey, when you travel, take this. Or
and if
this.
You find Buffalo Saber socks, you're gonna you'll have a good show.
Flash.
Or the Flash. They'll be good luck.
You know what? I've always been that guy that got to the airport way early.
Yeah,
like just
right.
It's kind of me.
Like,
yeah, I like that.
Why
too.
Are you rushing?
yeah, there could be a problem when you get there or whatever, but like,
relax.
Just the amount of stress that already goes into traveling, like,
yeah,
chill, really, relax. Chill. Yeah. Like, yeah, go fucking get a bite to eat.
I like that. I was like, I prefer to get there early, you know, and like, and yeah, like, chill, eat, because you know, like. It's always that pressure of like, I want to, like,
oh,
it's already.
Eliminating that stress is so valuable.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
and,
yeah. It's you always how you eliminate the stress? Get a Tesla.
Wherever you go.
There it is.
I think
quickly before.
Also, you can use my Tesla referral code. You get 1,000 free supercharger
nice.
Miles.
There it is.
But also, where
I'm giving you it, and you better link it in the description.
I do. Yeah, I will use it. But like, also, where people can find you in social media, you know, and also if you have any upcoming shows, you know, anything like that you want to share.
My website is tomtran.com, and my name is spelled T-H-O-M-T-R-A-N. Or you can spell it the regular way, because I own both websites.
Ah, nice.
Right.
Everything is _ tomtran, T-H-O-M-T-R-A-N, on the Twitters and the Instagram. I'm verified, so just type it in, and you'll find I'm going to be at the Factory and Flappers. Flappers is open.
Yes, it is. I went over there last night.
At some point, Josh said to send him emails, and I haven't yet. Because it's my mental health day. I'm at the Factory all the time because it's my home club. Awesome. I'll be in Buffalo in July. I'm actually doing Helium with Adam Ray.
Oh, nice.
So that's my first road gig post-pandemic.
Great. And you can see your family. I mean, well, yeah, no. Right. Well, it's after the season's over. You can watch it. You know.
No, that's right. Yeah,
you
July,
can talk to
so,
them.
But yeah, I'll be in Buffalo in
Buffalo
July.
Didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah,
so.
It was terrible. It was off. Being a Sabres fan is like being in an abusive relationship. It's like, starts great, and then at the end you're like, he didn't mean to hurt me.
I understand.
He just got angry and drunk.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, I mean, I'm in LA a lot. I'm not big on traveling these days. And when I do, it's going to be for like long chunks. Oh. United States of Al on CBS.
Yes,
June
24th. So check it out.
Got picked up for a second season.
Nice.
Excellent.
So I got a. Congrats. This was a one episode co-star, and hopefully I will be
they
back.
They can bring
for
you
more.
Back. As long as they don't kill you, you're good. I mean,
it got picked up for a second season. No, I didn't get killed in the episode.
I mean, especially in a comedy, would be weird. Right?
It'd be weird.
Like you got killed in a multi-kill. It's like, why?
Hopefully, I'll be back for the second season.
Great,
but yeah, it was fun. Everybody on the show was really great.
Nice.
Awesome. I'll tell you some cool stuff.
Awesome.
Once we turn off the cameras. But.
Well,
great.
Well, thank you very much for being a guest here at your own home.
Yeah, this was fun. I like that my dining room table is in the middle of my living room, like next to my TV.
I might just
leave it here. I won't.
There we go. Tom Tran, ladies and gentlemen. And that's our first time on the road hanging out with somebody. So,
thank you for having us. Remember to subscribe, listen to all the, you know,
yeah,
our channels,
the
all the Instagram,
pushing
all
the buttons
stuff.
And the likes and stuff.
Use my referral code if you're gonna buy a Tesla. You get 1,000 free miles. I get 1,000 free miles. It's like that. I've gotten 6 people to buy Teslas.
Really,
Enrique?
Wait a minute. I thought it was battery operated. Aren't the miles free? Anyway?
Yeah. You get superchargers.
You get five. Yeah. You get.
Right, let's get out of here before the Tesla files start doing their thing. See you guys later.